Accession number 28896, Reel 18.
Mr. Blewett, Reel 18. You said you were under canvas. Did you know the name of the place in Malta that you were...
Not really. We were outside Valletta, that's as much as we knew. I always remember there was an order went up owing to the restriction of food and that on the island. If you killed any chickens when you were out on the road, you paid for them. You had to pay for them. There were only narrow roads. When I say they were narrow, in comparison with the duck, how wide they were. You couldn't get two going down, you know, opposite end. So when you were going down the road and these hens and things were, you had to, like a barrier, you just stop and wait till they got out the road. Like you do with sheep now, with chickens then. They were very hard. And then, you know, you couldn't blame them because the food situation was bad.
And were you rationed?
Well, we just had our ordinary rations. the case of...
K rations or something.
K rations. Yeah. 14 men to a box.
And what was in them?
Well, there was the old reliable tea, sugar and milk all mixed up. There was jars of jam. McConaughey, the stew, that was generally, it's a great, they hate the sight of it, but there used to be rolled bacon, which was quite tasty, tinned potatoes, carrots and stuff like that. It was a bit amusing once, but it's going back again. When you got to, somebody had found these tins. We knew they were rations. They weren't poisoned or anything like that, but it was just somebody got the bright idea of putting them all in one big billy can, boiling them up. Forgot that the labels would come off, so you when you got them, you'd open it up and found it had been boiling a tin of jam or something like that. You know, one or two little things like that. But normally the cooks. They used to go to the cookhouse and they used to dish them out, you know, that up and get them sorted out, whatever meal you had for the day.
So what were you doing in Malta?
Practicing landings mostly, on and off, just on and off the shore, just practicing and keeping the maintenance. There was no going round ration-wise, you know, nothing like that, just practicing for the landing.
Presumably it was going out then coming in as if you were landing.
Yeah. It wasn't, we didn't seem to be there very long, but that was what it was. We weren't going off a ship, we're just going out to sea, turning around and coming back.
And were you carrying troops or?
No, just all coming in. And it was relatively calm all the time there, so it wasn't much. Wasn't much doing apart from that.
And this is coming up to the time of the invasion of Sicily on the 10th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that something was about
to happen? Oh, yes. Well, that was the idea. When we set off to Malta, some of us were expecting to be going to Italy, you know. So when they get to Malta and they said you're in the air, and then especially when we see Monte coming down the street, it was obviously that they were going to go into Sicily. They knew they had to go into Sicily before we went into Italy, put it that way. So we knew that.
And at what point did you realise that the preparations were changing? You were about to.
Well, when we went to. We sort of got split up amongst ourselves and got sent to different companies. We got sent to a Canadian div. And
were they on the island with you at that time?
Yeah. And then we went to... wait a minute. Yeah. Yes, we went with them. We never actually saw them before we picked them up, but they were attached, or we were attached to them, and for about 2 days. And that was funny with the Canadians. They never, as far as discipline was concerned, you were lined up for your meals and whatnot. We used to keep ourselves to ourselves, but when we were to mix in with them for meals, and it was funny, there was nothing unusual for a Canadian soldier to be shouting at his officer, "Hey, get back in that bloody queue. What do you think we are waiting for?" You know. So, and they used to get in the queue and all. Didn't use the time, use the rank to get any quicker service. They used to tell them when they used to get in the queue back.
That must have been a surprise to you.
Oh, it was. We would look at each other in amazement. Did he hear that? I just know better than us. Get in the bloody queue there. And they never took any. There weren't. I don't know what the word is for them, but they never used to bother. And as far as we were concerned, we were just the means to get them over to Sicily or wherever, you know, wherever we were going. They thought it was quite a novelty going in the ducks.
And they treat you well? I mean,
yes, the blokes themselves, yes. All right. Anything we can do for you, just ask. Yeah. I will say that with them and the Americans. Well, they treat you better than our lot. I mean, our you couldn't see our officers lining up with us to get the Russians and whatnot. They'd send the Batman or something like that for it. They wouldn't go. So it's a different, like the Yanks used to say, it's a different war. You limeys sure make it tough on you.
The 2 days you were with them, you would be eating there for. Was it better than what you were getting?
Just about the same. Just about the same. It wasn't until we were actually with the Yanks that we didn't think the food. There was a lot of exchanging going on, as far as food was concerned. The Yanks used to think our M&V was great, and they'd swap their something hash, meat hash, or something they used to call it. And I suppose it was just the change, the novelty of it. We used to swap for different stuff.
In their rations, they had all kinds of things.
Ice cream. Yeah, ever heard of ice cream? They used to have like a tree, and they used to have this thing up like a big urn, like a canvas. Ice cream. Just go across when you had your meal and help yourself to ice cream. It's unheard of. Never seen ice cream since we'd left England.
You would board the ship, obviously, to take it over to Sicily in Malta. Do you recall leaving Malta itself, the actual moment of leaving?
Well, it was a bit, I would say, hard, because we weren't wanting to be in the thick of it, but our section was more or less a rear party. I don't know whether it was on with the Canadians that we'd had or whatever, and there was about six of us. Were told, you were the rear party, so we weren't actually on the invasion itself. The lads had been gone in, and they were moving off backwards. You know, the Yanks, that map, it explains it better. But we didn't. When we got there, it was just straight onto the beach. There was no problems, you know.
Did you go over again with in that LST?
LST, yeah, LST.
So what were the tasks that you were? I mean, obviously the beach had been taken there. Was there any shelling going on as you approached the beach?
Well, there was a bit, but it always seemed to be inland more so than attacking.
Nothing coming our way.
So we were a bit lucky then. We got in and just discharged the
But what time would you be in relation to the initial landing?
That was about a day after, I think. About a day after.
And what were you doing? What was your task?
Well, we just unloaded them, and away they went.
The Canadians, they were just away they went.
And then when we started, that was when we started our normal work.
And that was?
Going out to ships, getting stuff, fetching stuff in, ammunition, food. Just taking them to little dumps. They were making dumps as they were coming in. They were just dumping them, and then other wagons would be taking them farther up. But the island wasn't all that big, so I think we were only there about a week or so before they'd surrendered. And it seemed that
when you say picking up supplies, how did you know which supplies that you were going to pick up in relation to other people?
We didn't. All we did was go out to the ships. We didn't know what we were getting there. And we didn't know. Obviously, you must have thought, had them sorted out at the ships, which supplies they wanted more urgent than the other. You'd go around and whoever was on the boat in charge of the unloading supplies used to just direct you to different holes on the ship, and you didn't know what you were getting on until you got it dumped in your dock. And then,
and at that point you wouldn't know what you were carrying.
Well, we knew it was either food or petrol. Mostly it was food and petrol. I think about that time was when we started getting jerry cans, you know, with petrol. But it was food and ammunition.
Was the beach marked so that you knew you knew where to take it?
Yeah, they had like lines up to get you onto the off the beach and onto the roads, and then they started having like a sort of signpost up where you were supposed to be headed. Different dumps, you know, so and so dump.
Who controlled the beachhead? I know you've mentioned the beach master, but were there troops who were specifically there to control and work on the beach? What do you call the beach blitz?
Well, there were like sappers clearing the area for mines and things like that that come under this beach. I think it was he was a member of parliament, Healy.
Dennis Healy.
He was a beach master at one place, because we didn't know who the hell he was when it just come out later on, and he was a beach master at one of the places we're at.
What kind of hours were you working at this?
Round the clock. Yeah, 8 on, 8 off.
So you think you were
two of us on the dock?
You're split into two.
Yeah,
you know, one group early, one group late. Was it heavy and exhausting work?
Well, not so bad as the sappers or the infantry. You know, wouldn't have swapped places. You know, I was quite happy to be doing that. And just when you'd done your 8 hours, you just get your head down, you know, whatever. But we're doing that 8 on, 8 off all the time until it cleared up. And we sort of made some sort of working arrangement with the ships. That they weren't. When we first started, they were on about, like I said, 8 on and 8 off. But when darkness come, put it that way, they weren't. They didn't want to light the ships up for planes. So maybe you do work till 12 o'clock or something like that, and then they decided to knock off until 6 o'clock in the morning, until it was daylight.
So you do 8 hours work, then you'd be off 8 hours, then you're back to work.
Yeah.
And
that was it.
That would take you over the day.
That's it.
Who was your co-driver? Who were you working with?
A chap called Bill Norden. The idea was to work with somebody, not your close friend, and he was working the same, so that you were off your time off, you had together. So that's the reason I didn't work with my friend from Darling, Kenny Clarkson, who's dead now. He was engaged to my sister. Or we'd have There was four of us together. We were very pally. Ken and this lad from Wales, who's still alive, and the Frankie Winder, who's still alive. He's knocking on to be about 89, I think, now. He's losing his marbles, but I keep in touch with them. So I'd work with Bill Norden, and Ken would be working with somebody else. And then when my time off, I knew I'd be on my time off the same as Ken, and Bill had his time off with one of his friends. And that was the chap that organised the reunions after the war down at Lincoln. Lovely fellow, lovely man. I was very fortunate. I never had anybody that was arguesome or wanted to fight or anything like that. You know, he was a lovely fellow. And we were in pup tents at the time. That was the name I was trying to think of before. American pup tents. There's only two could get in. And seeing he was about 6'3". And his feet would be sticking out one end, you know, and they were on the deck, on the soil. But fortunately, I acquired a little folding up off a Canadian officer. He didn't know I'd got it until after it landed. But when it come on, and I thought, what the hell's this? And just like canvas with little aluminium brackets and whatnot, to be about that high, about keep it that high off the ground. Lovely and comfortable. So I had this, and Bill was on the deck there. And it caused a bit. It was all right together, no problem. Never had any problems with Bill. Always very. And he was a bit of a comedian and all, and he was, with his height and all. Lovely fella he was. In fact, his wife, Audrey, she's still alive. That was the time when there was a programme on, and little Audrey laughed, I forget what it was, some radio programme. And we used to read the letters out, you know, him from home and me from my girlfriend or whatever it was at the time, mother, and they weren't very good letter writers, my mother and father, they weren't. But, and you used to try and let them know where you were in your letters. Because when I come back, I seen some of them, and they were all blacked out, you know, penciled out, crayoned out, they were. So it was dear mother and father, oh, and then crossed out. So anything like that would do in the job. But we were in pup tents, and that was it. And we were, until the orderly officer, well, I'm saying the orderly officer, our officer, he used to come round and inspect you every now and then. And he's seen this little pup tent that I had. The officer had a, like a canvas, like a bed about this high off the ground. And I always remember he come round one more. And we had the tents used to be the sides up, like when the weather, during the day. And he come round and he used to talk a bit toffy nose, and he was only a clerk in some shipping office, like when the war started. My God, Blue, is this a... What's that you've got? I said, the bed, sir. That looks very handy, sir. I think you'll have to exchange that with mine. I said, no way. I said, besides, I can't even get yours. I said, there'll be no room for Bill to sleep. I suppose so, he said. But he was very envious of me.
What was his name?
Gibb, Lieutenant Gibbs.
And he was in charge of your...
He was in charge of our platoon.
What was he, well, other than that, what was he like as a...
He was all right. The occasions I had on time... I drove this duck B3. There wasn't a B1 and B2, because that was... I think B1 was the workshop duck. He used to travel at the back of the convoy in case anything, when you were going out anywhere. This was when we were going any place. And I think B2 used to carry the food, the coops and whatnot. So B3 was like the leading duck when we went, when we moved anywhere. And this wasn't when we were doing any jobs in London. And so I used to get stuck with him. He used to be in the duck. And I remember once, I can't think, it was just, I was supposed to be just outside Rome or somewhere. And we were moving, and it was absolutely chucking it down. And we, like I said, we didn't have no cover. And the other driver, he just got underneath the canvas that was in the corner, just covered himself up, and we were going along the road, and he said, "My God, blew it. I don't know how you can see in this weather." I said, "I keep one eye shut, sir," and I said, "You keep going along." He was absolutely, he was cowered underneath the little shelter he had over there. And it was, you know, it's to go along. He didn't have no option. He was sat in like a canvas seat that was like a canvas, and you were sat in like a pool of water with the rain. So it was more comfortable after a bit to sit in the water and keep warm. When you started moving about, that was when you found it sticking to your uniform and things like that, you know. That happened, we were going along this particular time, and we stopped for a spell. There was supposed to be a cook tea and whatnot somewhere, but it never prevailed at that time. But I always remember the DR, the dispatch rider, the corporal who was supposed to be leading, and he'd skidded off the road, he skidded off the road, so we stopped, and about three or four of us, we lifted his motorbike in, Alf Hill, that was the corporal there, London bloke. Said, "Get in the bloody wagon, Alf, don't be trying to be driving that, you know." So we took, pushed him into, got the bike up, put him in the wagon, and he took shelter under the canvas as well. This, my spare driver, he said, what's the spare driver, the second driver, he said, "Do you want a spell, Bill?" And I said, "No, it's a waste of time, I'm soaking wet anyway." I said, "No use both of us being wet." "Oh, thank you," he said, back underneath. And this officer, he took his belt, undone his belt, and hung it on the side with his revolver in. He took it and he just hung it on the side. And so after a bit, "Right, oh, mount up, everybody back in the wagon, duck back in." We set off again down the road. We'd gone about 5 miles or so. "Stop!" Stopped. "What's the matter?" "I've left my belt," he said, "on the side." Of course, when we set off again, it had just gone on the side, so he lost his revolver. "What do you want to do?" "I don't suppose we'll find it," he said, "this weather." So off we went. And I thought to myself afterwards, if it had been me with a rifle, I'd have been up for it. You know, the rifle you lost, you pay for. The rifle you replace, you pay for. And so on, so on, so on. And I often thought about that. One law for the officers and one for the man. But he never did find his revolver.
Coming back to your pup tents, were you sleeping next to your vehicles?
Yeah.
You slept next to your vehicles there, at the time.
More or less, yeah. Sometimes you're just as well getting under them when the weather was bad, but pup tents were all right. They did their job.
And were there any casualties amongst you at all during these early days of the Sicily invasion?
Not that I know of. I believe there was one chap, but I think there was two ducks blown up as they were coming in, but they weren't in our company, you know, and weren't our platoon. So I don't really know. I think there was a couple blown up. But if you didn't know them, it was just hard luck, sort of stuff. But,
and you stayed with the Canadians throughout the campaign, did you?
We did. We stayed there until we took them over to Italy. We were staying on at where the volcano was.
Etna.
And I went right at the base of it. The night before we went, and I remember thinking to myself before I fell asleep, "I hope that bloody thing doesn't start erupting, Lester. It's going to be a mass evacuation here." We weren't thinking about getting to Italy, just getting out the road, but in the event it didn't do anything.
Was this the coast side of
yeah,
the,
yeah,
on the,
yeah.
the very narrow
the plains, yeah, right next to the. See where it was. Like we say, he went saying it was Vesuvius next to us. It may be a couple of miles or so away, but I thought we're looking if it's out there open, we can still get caught in that.
What were your experiences of the Sicilians that you came across?
They weren't, again, like Maltese, they were very protective of the women. They didn't, I don't think they actually liked us. We were just, I suppose, as far as they were concerned, it was just a matter of, as soon as we get rid of them, we go back to normal life, you know, back to. But they didn't. We didn't have any much contact with them. The only time, I think it was in Sicily. Did I say about the dentist business?
Yes, we did the dentist.
Apart from that, was.
When the campaign ended, and before you took the Canadians over to Messina, did you get much time for relaxing and leisure?
Not in Sicily. Well, what we did, actually, as far as leisure was concerned, we started a concert party in amongst ourselves. Like I say, this lad I was with, we had about three blokes, Scousers, who were real comedians anyway, and Bill, and a lad called Jack Doyle. They used to do the... We started our own little concert party just to entertain. You were getting bored if you didn't have some sort. You'd get sick of writing letters or whatever, smoking. So we'd started this little concert party we had. And we had a lieutenant who was in like pioneers. Only a young chap, but a hell of a pianist. Oh, that was something we did. We went and won a piano. Went round this hotel and we won a piano. Beautiful piano it was.
Does that mean you purloined it?
We looted it. We knocked the window out of this hotel. It was up about a couple of stories high. So we knocked the window out and manoeuvred it to the... Got ropes up and whatnot. Lowered it down onto a dock. And this lieutenant, beautiful. When we got it back to camp, that was his pride and joy. Like, I think he forgot about his men. Pride and joy, so.
Do you remember his name?
He used to entertain on a night, you know.
Do you remember his name?
No, I don't. I couldn't remember his name.